But wildlife are not the only animals that are impacted by our inclination towards 24/7 illumination. We are too. And with me now is Franco Capuccio, who's a cardiovascular physician at the University Hospitals of Coventry and Warwickshire, and looks at this question. How can light pollution affect our health, Franco?
Light is the most important environmental cue that we have for synchronizing our circadian rhythm, as well as animals, also human beings have that. So any change that happens in the light-dark cycles will cause changes in the way the biological clocks work, and therefore affecting our sleep patterns in terms of quantity and quality.
And what's the evidence that if you have those sorts of disturbances, the health impacts are negative?
The epidemiology of sleep in large populations now have clearly shown that disturbances in terms of quality and quantity, so deprivation and also the fragmentation, are associated with the short-term effects that we may all know and recognize, like reduced alertness, reduced performance, low mood. But also more worryingly now, we know there are long-term effects, and the long-term effects are quite serious. We go from an increased incidence of obesity, high blood pressure and diabetes, to more significant increase in fatal and non-fatal heart attacks and strokes, and not mentioning mental health, depression, anxiety. And there is some evidence now to link disruption of sleep to some form of cancers like breast cancer and prostate cancer.
Can we causally link that? Do we know, for example, that light pollution is causing the dysregulation of our body clocks and that is causing these diseases?
In terms of long-term conditions, can only be taken from experimental studies, can have a shorter duration. But if you manipulate, for instance, a sleep duration, or you disrupt sleep in different ways, you can have a reversible cardiometabolic and functional effects on a number of functions, which, if sustained, would lead to the serious conditions. So we know that those effects are reversible when we change the disruption of sleep. So there is a very direct link between how much sleep is reduced in terms of quantity or is disrupted, and the entity of the cardiometabolic and also mental health issues that you find later on.
In these contexts, what do we actually call light pollution then? What do I need to be exposed to cause these sorts of disruptions and therefore put myself at risk of the sorts of conditions that you've been outlining?
Yeah, the importance of light in regulating sleep is quite complex. We have some biological clocks in our brain that kick to give us a day-night cycle, but they're not exactly 24 hours. So what we do, we have a system through our eyes that detect day and night in order to tell the body clock to resynchronize every day to the 24 hour, which is our conventional day that we have created as human beings to get together. Now, that light eventually comes to the body, will stop one hormone called melatonin, which we call sometimes the sleeping hormone. And when it gets darker, the eye transfers that message, so the melatonin goes up and we tend to fall asleep. And vice versa, when daylight starts in the morning, the melatonin shuts down. So these are mainly affected by what we call blue light. The blue light has the effect of day of the sun, so has intensity and spectrum very similar to the sun. Whereas a red light, which is of less energetic at the long wavelength, is more conducive to, let's say, sleep or dozing off. So in reality, we need to avoid during the night any light which is bright, so it's blue, has high intensity and spectrum. I'm afraid we have many of the lit environments at night which are very bright blue light, and that would obviously disrupt sleep in the people exposed to it on a regular basis.
So is one mitigation then that we either dissuade people from exposing themselves to these blue lights, because television screens these days, laptop screens, mobile phone screens, we're all on these things all the time. We're all deluged in this light. We're all disrupting our body clocks then. Is it just that we've got to turn those things off? Or are there other ways that we can mitigate this so that they don't impact on our sleep in the same way or to the same extent?
Well, that's very important. First of all, let me give you two or three numbers. In 2008, estimates where the 50% of the human population now lives in urban areas. And by 2050, it is estimated that more than 90% will be urbanized and living in cities. Now, when we work out how much time we spend indoors in cities, at the moment it's nearly 80%. And one third is spent in our bedroom. So when we get these numbers, we understand that the first thing is the indoor activity of light has to be regulated so that is conducive to maintaining our daytime and night cycle. Otherwise, we'll always be awake. And there are rules for the individuals they need to follow. And definitely not having a screen in the room is the first thing, particularly if it projects very blue. High-intensity light. But also we need to understand that most of the indoors activity happens in offices, in schools, and in particular in hospitals. I have experience where being in a hospital at night is terrible because the lights are on all the time and patients can't sleep. So, and therefore there is an issue between what is awareness and behavioral change, but I suspect I would put sleep and light pollution and other problems within the domain of public health and policy, where I think there needs a more societal change. For instance, architects and planners at the moment consider light using the visual performance type of problem. In other words, make a road safe, visible. But they don't consider what is the non-visual effects, which is exactly what we're talking about.
Thanks, Franco, for outlining it. Very well put. Franco Capuccio there.